From the Subaru of Gwinnett Studio at the Gas South Convention Center in Duluth, Georgia, welcome to Celebrating Powerhouse Women, proudly presented by NEMA and Sourced.
And hello again, everybody, and welcome to Celebrating Powerhouse Women, the series that salutes and recognizes women leaders making an impact in our community. I am your host, Amanda Pierce Marmolejo, and on this rainy day, I have a beautiful ray of sunshine in studio joining us to share her story. Today, I would like to welcome Dr. Sasensa Kabeta. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
The doctor is... She oversees a private practice, which is located where?
Snellville.
In Snellville, Georgia. And it has a beautiful and unique name, and I'll have you give that to our listeners.
Sure. Sally Glassa, Direct Primary Care and Consulting Services.
Now, give us a quick overview of the type of services that she provides for those listening that might be unfamiliar.
Sure. So Sally Glassa is direct primary care, which is basically a primary care model that directly works with patients. In other words, does not use insurance. There is access to patients on an unlimited basis and same-day appointments and extended visit times for membership. So that's the model. And we also provide consulting services to organizations that may want to use Sally Glassa's expertise and quality improvement and patient engagement training.
Oh, I like that, patient engagement. You know, some people probably have a unique perspective about their experience at the doctor, but I like to engage with the professionals and I like to learn myself. So the fact that you mentioned that is amazing. With a unique name, I'd love for you to explain how you settled upon the name for your practice and then kind of talk about how you established it here in the Gwinnett County community.
Sure. So Sally Glassa is actually a made-up name. I made it up using names that stand for peace, wisdom, intellect, justice, and curiosity. So that really is a mishmash of words that mean those things to me, that mean, you know, those particular values to me. And the way I started the organization here in Snellville is I moved here. I.e., I moved to Atlanta metro area about a year ago. I'm originally from Baltimore, Maryland. Have been practicing in medicine and doing various things in healthcare for many, many years, about 20 years. Finally moved here mainly for short reasons to be close to my parents. And I started it mainly because I have been working in healthcare, as I said, for about 20 years and have seen the shortcomings of healthcare delivery model as it exists right now. So I really wanted to come to a place where I can create a healthcare delivery model to the type of idealistic and ideal settings that I had always envisioned practicing in, mainly given enough time with patients, being able to explain things to patients in a way that makes them feel like they're heard. And that's the whole idea behind patient engagement and really helping patients understand their disease processes, being able to explain questions in a manner they understand it, and also really focus on patient safety, making sure that you're not rushed in a sense that makes you feel like you're sort of doing things half well done. So it really is it's an organization, it's a healthcare process that is set up to bypass some of the shortcomings I've noticed.
It sounds like you've taken a template and you kind of put it into play and it's thriving. Talk about some of the shortcomings that you mentioned, some of the things that you experienced earlier in your career before forming your practice that kind of led you to this turning point.
Yeah. So this is probably an experience that everyone, essentially everyone, whether you are a healthcare provider or a patient, can attest to. You get to your doctor sometimes after having to wait for many, many weeks. So first of all, primary care appointments are very short to come by. So the access is very difficult. That's the number one problem. The other problem is once you get an appointment, the doctor is usually very busy and you're given 15 minutes per patient to see that patient, whether you have 10 diagnoses or one, the amount of time given to see one patient is the same. So the healthcare system does not make any allowance for us physicians to adjust our contact time with our patients based on their need. So we're basically pushed to produce almost like in a factory production model, a cookie cutter model. I have to see the 24-year-old who has sinusitis in the same amount of time that I have to see the 65-year-old who has hypertension, diabetes, depression, arthritis, heart disease. So you can see it really truly is a model that just doesn't work either for the patient or for the physician. And then in the midst of all of this rush is a plethora of administrative work that physicians are burdened with. So you have to have prior authorization for certain procedures or medications you provide for your patients. So I may see a patient, I may diagnose them with certain things, and I may prescribe a certain medication. Sometimes insurance companies may deny that. So then I have to get on the phone and make sure that I plead the case with that insurance company. And then I have to dictate in a certain way that could allow the, you know, CMS or other payers to be able to reimburse my work. Mm-hmm. If I don't diagnose certain things or document certain ways, I don't get reimbursed. So there's so much pressure, so much administrative layers that has nothing to do with me being a good physician, mm-hmm. that in fact works against me being a good physician. So I did a little bit of that. Thankfully, most of my career had been in academic medicine, which allowed me to diversify my practice. So I oversaw the clinic where resident physicians are working. So part of the work was mostly supervisory in that sense. And I was also as I mentioned earlier, public health practitioner. So I worked in public health and other leadership positions. So I did have a little bit of a break, quote unquote, from the rigors of day in and day out pure primary care. But I can't imagine continuing to do that for too long. So I just needed to step out and create a way I could do it differently.
Well, you made a way that sounds very accommodating. You know, I'm sure everybody listening can empathize with what you just mentioned, spending that just brief, 5 to 8 minutes with a doctor, and you have so much to just share with them at that time. I tip my hat to you for wanting to elongate that time with your patients and truly give them what they deserve as far as your attention to properly diagnose. I know there are some errors sometimes when people move quickly. So it sounds like you provide an expert level of assistance to your clients. Now, was this what was part of your decision to go into private practice, all the things that you mentioned?
Yeah, precisely.
What are some, you mentioned leadership and being in your field. What are some key leadership lessons that you've learned throughout the stages of forming your primary care?
So, I have been in leadership in many, many aspects of healthcare, going back to residency as a chief resident. And then soon after I did graduate studies, I was hired by Yale University to lead chief executive officer's training for a project they had in Ethiopia. And then more recently, as I was a chief medical officer at a clinic in Hartford, Connecticut. So I have been in leadership positions in various ways, including my own, starting my own program or my own organization. And the lessons, I think, in general are, first and foremost, I'll start with what I find hard, the hardest part of being a leader in any capacity, whether it's, creating your own organization and running it or becoming a leader of an organization is you really have to be able to come to peace with your idealistic or ideals in general vis-a-vis the reality on the ground, which does not always correspond with the ideals you have in mind. Mm. And healthcare is a prototypical in that sense. from the outside, it's a very idealistic business or entity. It's an organization or it's an entity that's set up to reduce suffering, to help people, to alleviate pain. But when you come into it, at the end of the day, it is a business. So there is a lot of issues that come intertwined in being a business. There's somebody who needs to make profit. There is someone who needs to do things in a certain way or have to complete things at a certain time of period. So I think being a leader in any capacity, in any form, requires making peace with those realities on the ground and with your own ideals.
I was trying to write that down. Making peace with your ideas on the ground and your own ideals.
Right.
This is the second time you referenced. First of all, that's beautiful. The second time you've referenced peace or justice or circling around forming the name of your practice. So I'm curious. Obviously, you are a mindful and I'd venture to say spiritual person. Tell me where you find that peace that you describe.
I guess I have to say, I mean, I think peace lives within each of us. I really do believe that. It's a matter of how we cultivate that. And, you know, I was born to a not particularly religious family, although we were Christians. I was part of a church for many, many years. However, I don't go to church anymore. But I do practice spirituality by way of meditating and taking time out, typically being in nature, which to me is a real place of solace. And also just immersing myself in poetry and music and things like that that are more meditative in nature. My personality is more of a hyper work, achieve. So I had to learn to step away from that and learn to slow down and learn to go into places where those kind of peacefulness or mindfulness can be cultivated. So it really is I have to say it's a practice. I'm nowhere near good at it, but I try. But that's where it's most of the I guess commitments or the values that you mentioned, that I mentioned about the organization's name come from.
I'm curious, you mentioned that you enjoy poetry.
Yes.
Did you say you also write poetry?
I do not write
poetry.
No?
Okay. That would be amazing.
You do not want me to write poetry.
We can all write haikus, right? We remember those from school. Do you journal? What do you do for personal development?
Yeah, I do journal. I do journal quite a bit. I do like writing, actually, to be fair to myself. I write and have always been writing. And I write reflections about my experience with my patients, my experience in traveling, my experience in just social conditions a lot, just not in the form of poetry. And I do journal.
For those of you just joining us, we are speaking with Dr. Kabetta, and she is a worldly traveler and very interesting person. I would like to go back to your time in Ethiopia, if we may, because we just kind of glazed over that. You were a part of an initiative that was during the time of the pandemic. Can you share with us your experience and what you did over there during that time?
Yeah. So to clarify, the first time I went back as an adult to work for Ethiopia, it was actually way before the pandemic, it was in 2007. The Clinton Health Access Initiative had collaborated with the Ministry of Health of Ethiopia to train their first hospital chief executive officers in order to revamp the healthcare system of the country. And they solicited Yale University to help in this project. And I happened to be finishing up my master's in public health at Hopkins, and I got recruited by Yale to go and lead that project. So it was a wonderful opportunity. I am Ethiopian in origin. I was born and I still speak the language, so I was lucky. But it was a big project. I was already a physician, but 3 years out and had finished my master's in public health and policy and health systems. So I was deployed over there and I worked for 2 years. And my job basically was to train the inaugural chief executive officers for the country. And it was an amazing experience and a wonderful experience that was probably next to it really is next to none in terms of my experience. And I have done a lot of things, but that truly is a highlight.
You say with such humility. Out of curiosity, you said that you're from Ethiopia originally. Yes. When did you come to the United States?
I came to the U.S. in 1988, I want to say. We left Ethiopia when I was 12 and a half. I was young, but my parents moved around a little bit, so we lived in Tanzania and then Botswana before we came to the U.S. So I was a senior in high school when I came to the U.S.,
and you still held on to your native language, which is, excuse my name,
Amharic.
And is that where some of the name for your practice came in? It sounded like it was another language when you were describing what it meant.
Yeah, probably a couple of it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So you were essentially recruited. That means that you are an outstanding in your field, enough to be noticed for somebody to want to recruit you to train the chief medical officer. That is amazing.
I think what happens is, and this happens, it's probably a combination of, you know, to be honest, that I mean, I was at the right place at the right time. These, I guess, Ivy League schools do tend to share information with each other. I was a graduating class from Hopkins, and Yale was looking for somebody who was in that field, who can go and, you know, help lead this project. So being Ethiopian origin and being somebody who was already working there, and I was doing some consulting work already for the World Bank at the time, so I did have a little bit of credibility behind, I guess, the name. But I think it was also, as I said, being at the right time, the right place, and being, you know, being able to speak the language perfectly, all of that helped. So.
Well, cheers to being at the right place at the right time. What an amazing experience. So you've gone back since and you have provided a variety of aid. What other capacities have you gone back to Ethiopia in?
After I left there, actually, I have probably gone back only twice. And the last time I went back prior to the pandemic, I went and I taught quality improvement to hospital staff. So I went and I gave some workshop on quality improvement. I did that. And then during the pandemic, a couple friends of mine who are also Ethiopian Americans, all of us were at Hopkins at some point or other, got together and we created educational modules and COVID management training, you know, live via
Zoom.
There we go. During that pandemic. So we did a little bit of that. But my biggest work was during the 2007-2009 period when I was there, living there and working there.
Amazing. And last question before we go to our break. What inspired you originally to go into medicine? So I'm thinking back to when you were 12 or 14. Did you know then that you always wanted to help people? Where did your inspiration come from?
Yeah. So I actually have always known I was going to be a doctor. You look back, you're like, I don't know if that was something that was put in your mind because your parents say you were going to be, but I had never even thought of being anything else. So I cannot remember wanting to be anything except a doctor.
Well, she was born with it, folks. When we return from our break, we're going to learn a little bit more about Dr. Kabeta.
NEMA is a full-service logistics company that provides trucking, warehousing, and expedited deliveries for the paper machine clothing industry. They offer a full line of services, including delivery within the 48 contiguous states, Canada, and Mexico, plus importing and exporting, air freight forwarding services, foreign trade zone warehousing, and many more services to handle your global logistics needs. NEMA is a proud sponsor of the Celebrating Powerhouse Women podcast series.
We know running a business is hard. There are so many things that need to get done, and you don't have the time, the resources, the experience, or you just don't want to do it yourself. At Sourced, we have your back. Office. We support leaders of companies with all their back office challenges that weigh them down. Whether it's accounting, talent acquisition, administrative support, marketing, or human resources, our team of experts at Sourced will make your life easy and your back office effortless. To see how we can help you, check us out at GetSourced.com.
All right, and welcome back, folks, to Celebrating Powerhouse Women. I am your host, Amanda, joined in studio today by Dr. Cabetta, and she owns and operates the Sally Glossa Primary Care. I got better at saying that
you
towards the end. I thought it was two words to begin with. Excuse the marbles in my mouth. Before the break, we were learning all about your robust career in medicine, and you were born with the itch to go out there and practice and serve. So I'm curious, in what other ways do you serve the community outside of what you do daily within your practice?
I'm a big believer in community work. In fact, part of the reason I have found the conventional medical care delivery model unsatisfactory as it is it really does take you away from the ability to connect with people in a meaningful way. And for reasons we mentioned, that 15 minutes per patient just doesn't do it for developing relationships. So I've always had some sort of voluntary work where I go out to the community. When I lived in Baltimore, I used to teach a class called Your Health in Baltimore. So we'd sit around in a coffee shop. There's this small coffee shop called Red Emma's, and they had a place like this and a table where you would bring in anybody, and if you want to teach, you just propose what you want to teach, and you can teach the community. So I used to take volunteers, some of them my residents or medical students, and then we'd go out to Greenmount Road and solicit people to come and talk to us about their experience with healthcare. Mm-hmm. So literally we'll sit around the table and ask, you know, when was the last time you were at the doctor? What was that like? What did you like? What didn't you like? If you were given the opportunity, how would you design healthcare? What would you like your doctor to do or know about you? So we had that conversation multiple times. It was truly very eye-opening, humbling, touching in many ways, and gives you an idea what our patients are like. It was the first time that this group of people had doctors who were not wearing white gowns to sit with them in a conference room. So very, very candid, very touching, very eye-opening. So I like those opportunities. I have not settled down enough, I don't think, here in the Atlanta metro area to create that. But I really am looking forward for a chance to be part of the community once again. Oh, actually, in fact, I just remembered, on the 23rd, I do have a conversation with the community in Grayson, where the conversation is engagement, why you need to be engaged in your own healthcare. And I'm going to give a talk to the community. Free to the public. It's going to be in a wellness studio in Grayson, Georgia, if anybody's interested. So I'm hoping to start something like this where we'll have a conversation with the community.
That's so important to bring it down to the personal level again. Something that came to mind when you're talking about that, maybe it's because the presidential election's coming up, but you're making medicine personal again. Okay, you're kind of removing that veil and you're getting down to the nuts and bolts with the person themselves. So that's amazing that you took the time. It sounded a little bit like a case study that you kind of did to understand what the need was, what the experiences were like of the public. Yeah. And you are striving to provide something completely different from what people expect.
Yeah.
Thinking back to the days that you were, going through college and acquiring all of these accreditations to practice, can you remember a time that you had to overcome a challenge or an obstacle, and surmounting it really just was that breath of fresh air on the other side? And if so, I'd love for you to share that instance.
Yeah. So I guess the path to this point, just like everybody's life, you have challenges and in college, medical school, because I have been, again, that tunnel vision that you asked me, did I always know I wanted to be a doctor? I did. It's good and bad, right? The good is that you were focused, but the bad is that focus could be pretty tight sometimes. Mm-hmm. It could be pretty constricting, and it could be stress-inducing too, because it's almost like, you know, you will do anything, and you have, at all costs, you have to get there, that kind of thing. So sometimes it's good to let go. Sometimes it's good to relax. Sometimes it's good to be flexible and have some other options. So I think I drove myself a lot harder than I should have. For me, the biggest challenge when I look back is the challenge that I put on myself. Some of it is really unnecessary, that level of drivenness, the level of, if it's not this, mm-hmm. then, you know, that kind of thing. How did I get over it? I am still working, right? And I think earlier you asked me about, you know, spirituality or peace. This is where, for me, it's absolutely important. I have to take time out to take a breath, mm-hmm. to walk in nature. I jog, I walk, I just have to be quiet to get myself to that level of everything center. Doesn't have to be a fight. Mm-hmm. You have to relax. You have to just loosen up a little bit. So that is my biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have studied hard. I can tell you all kinds of sob stories about struggles, but I think the biggest struggle for me is my own tendency to just drive and drive, drive, drive.
I can empathize with that feeling, kind of having a one lane train, if you may. Stone Mountain. Do you ever hike Stone Mountain?
You know, my parents live there. So every time I go to visit them, mm-hmm. which is once a week, we try to walk there when the weather does well. So mm-hmm. I love Stone Mountain. It's such a beautiful place.
I enjoy hiking it. I did in my youth, and it was treacherous with little legs. You know, that's a big old mountain. Unfortunately, because it's so popular on the weekends, yeah. I don't really care to fight the crowds. Yeah. But if you can sneak away, being that you love nature so yeah. much, and take a hike during the week, yes. I highly recommend that.
Yes, yes.
Outside of kind of getting involved with nature and exercising, you used a term, and I wrote it here with quotations, let go. What would you say that you do to kind of let go? Do you like to listen to, loud music while you curl your hair or vacuum? Do you do CrossFit? Tell me about some other outlets yeah. to kind of be your own personal.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't listen to loud music. I guess... I don't know, maybe because my own tendency, again, like I mentioned, tends to be more work and achieve, and I always have long list of to-dos, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. Yeah. I always feel like I have to counter that with something that's gentler, less structured. I love classical music. I love mm-hmm. quiet music. I do try to go to some sort of a show once in a while. So I come out and especially dance. If there's a dance show, I go to a performance, I go. I love to just listen to quiet music in my sunroom. And when it's colder, have candles going. So I'm more...
Set the mood.
Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. more into like nature, quieter, gentler type of that's where I'm at. When I was in college, I used to go out a lot and dance to mm-hmm. dance music and things like that. But I guess I'm kind of getting older now.
Hey, it happens to us all. I enjoy a lot of cultural cuisine, and I am very unfamiliar with any style of Ethiopian food. Can you share with me something that you enjoy either currently making or something that you remember from your youth?
Yeah, so Ethiopian food, I'm surprised, in fact, Amanda, that you've not had Ethiopian food because it's fairly, popular even in Atlanta. So Ethiopian food the basis is called injera. It's this fermented, thin, pancake-like bread. And then on top of it is multiple sauces that are made either, vegetable-based or meat-based. And, there's a ton of places, I think, downtown, that serve them. I don't buy it because my mom makes it.
Of course.
I don't cook it because my mom makes it for me. So, but I love it. It's really, really good. I really suggest you go check it out. Check out Ethiopian food, and I'm sure something will pop up in Atlanta.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
I agree. My mother, nobody or anybody can hold a flame to how good she makes things. Yes. I myself am trying to recreate them just so that I can keep them, you know, going forever when she is in heaven. however, I can never make it quite as good. So, Doctor, going back to that association game, I'm going to ask you a couple words and then just off the rip, just let me know what you're thinking. Mm-hmm. So first of all, it's going to be resilience.
Resilience, staying power.
Value.
Authentic.
Community.
Lifeblood.
Oh, I like that. And the last one, this is a Southern term, and I don't mean the kind that you eat, but grit.
Strength.
That's what I was thinking too. Thank you for indulging me.
Absolutely. I remember I spent many, many years in North Carolina. So I'm actually a Southern girl in some ways, right?
Is North Carolina more Southern than Georgia?
Probably
not geographically,
not.
But as far as the twang? Not.
Well, one thing though, in the Atlanta metro area, I think a lot of people are from outside, i.e. not necessarily from the South. Mm-hmm. So I don't hear the Southern twang. But North Carolina...
Yeah. You hear the draw.
Yes, you do.
All the places that you've lived and had a chance to experience, what would you say was your favorite place to spend the most time?
Anywhere in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Probably Senegal.
Do tell.
I went to Senegal right after I came back from my work in Ethiopia. I was sort of in between. I was like, do I go back to the U.S. and continue my work as a physician? What do I do? So I had a little bit of time. So I decided I was going to go to Senegal. And I had gone there once before to visit. It's a country in the Western Africa, and it's beautiful. And so I went there, and I basically rented a house in Dakar, Senegal. And I enrolled myself in advanced French at the University of Dakar. And, yeah, so I just lived there for about 4.5 months. It was right by the beach. I would jog on the beach, and I would walk to school.
Wow.
It was wonderful. It really is. People are beautiful. They're just, people are very kind, very nice. The country is just gorgeous.
It sounds magical.
It's beautiful.
So did you learn how to speak French in those 4 months?
I was speaking French already. So I was taking advanced French to improve my French. So,
how many languages do you speak?
Just three.
Just three?
Yeah.
I must introduce you to a fellow powerhouse woman and friend of mine, Berthine. She is French as well.
Oh,
well,
cool.
You're not French, but you two could speak French together. I don't know how often you get to use your French language.
Yeah, there's actually in Atlanta, there's a French group that I belong to. It's called Joie de Vivre. So
something of life, right?
Yeah.
Joie de Vivre.
Yeah, joy of life.
Joy of life.
Yeah, exactly. You got it. You speak French.
No, I just know the parlez-vous français, un peu, but Latin, you know, just breaking down the Latin
Absolutely.
Derivative, I get just a little bit of,
yes.
But of course, you know Latin with medicine, or you use Latin with medicine.
True.
Doctor, I've genuinely enjoyed our conversation today, and I know that you have definitely inspired some of our listeners, if nothing, to get out there and travel and to make an impact here in our community. I shared with you before the show that the last words would be yours. So as we round the end of the segment, I'd like for you to leave some words of wisdom with our listeners.
Yeah, so I guess every one of the things I've learned, I guess, is no matter what path your life takes, it has to be your own making. And by that, I mean the path we're on has to be consistent with our inner self, with our authentic self. So whether you are, quote, in a leadership position, or whether you're a business owner, whether you're a student, whether you're a homemaker, whatever you are, I think our main goal should be, how are we with ourselves? Because I think when we are content and when we are right inside, then I think things in the outside all finally would fall in place. So I think that is the biggest work for each of us, I think.
Beautiful. Your path has to be your own. I like jotting it down so I can remember it later. Doctor, if anybody out there would like to learn more about Sally Glassa or connect with you possibly on LinkedIn, how could they find your team or how can they find your practice?
Yeah. So Sally Glassa Direct Primary Care is found in 2245 Wisteria Drive. That's where our location is. Our physical office is actually in the Thrive co-working space. Mm-hmm. So they can find us there. We're found on the website. Our website is saliglassa.com, SALIGLASA.com. They can call us, 762-499-5907. We'll be happy to talk to them and make an appointment for them. Another thing, we're having an open house on the 24th of this month, which is a Sunday, 2 to 4. And anyone and everyone is welcome to come and check us out and ask questions. So those are some of the ways they could reach out to us.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing your journey, your experience, and your passion with our listeners.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
My pleasure. As you guys know, you can find this show anywhere you enjoy listening to your podcasts. I listen on iTunes, available on Spotify, again, wherever you enjoy them, 24/7 on businessradiox.com, and we are live on Fridays at 11:30. For our guest today, Dr. Cabetta, I am your host, Amanda Pierce Marmolejo, and this is Celebrating Powerhouse Women.